This is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski on 104.5 The Zone.
Coming up in 15 minutes, Greg Cosell of NFL Films on the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Three locations for you for lunch later today, 12 Southeast Nashville and in Sylvan Park. We will be broadcasting live from Sylvan Park this coming Friday. And at this time on Friday, they will be open with $5 breakfast tacos, $4 Edley's Best Beer all day long, plus Nashville-style hot pulled pork all day long on Fridays. Edley'sBBQ.com. You can download the Edley's app for more information.
We read a tweet earlier where somebody was suggesting the Titans ticket buying process was on hold until tomorrow. I don't believe that's the case. People have had their times readjusted and pushed back as the Ticketmaster system, I think, is being slowed down and some strain taken off of it. So if you're a season ticket member waiting on your time window, you should check your email and see if your time window's been adjusted. But I believe they're proceeding today. They're just slowing it down.
Taking their time with Ticketmaster. What a headache. You know what this feels like? All the calls and all the nervous tension about getting tickets. This feels like 15 years ago when you had to camp out at Kroger on Saturday morning for 10 a.m. for Titans tickets. That's what fans used to do. And how quickly that changed as soon as social media and everything else came into play. We would go. Larry Stone would send me out on Saturday mornings, the day that tickets would go on sale in July. And we would do live reports on what locations had certain tickets available.
I stayed a day in line in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey for 10 Springsteen dates in 1984, which was my first concert. Had to come back the next day, wristbanded, to get back in line. And that was my first concert, one of 10 shows at Brendan Byrne Arena, the Meadowlands.
Reed, you brought up an interesting idea, going back to the old school way of doing this. And we're talking about Ticketmaster at Kroger and everything else during a break of who should have been handling this ticket process from the beginning.
I don't understand. So Jonathan called in and reminded me that like 80% of Ticketmaster's employees were furloughed at one point during the pandemic.
Oh.
But this should always have been routed through the Titans ticket office itself. Your rep should have been the one handling it. And I know that would have prolonged the process, but had this process gotten started earlier with cooperation from the city planning for this, this all could have been handled through the ticket office with the Titans. And I guarantee you, the results would have been much better. You would have built a lot more goodwill dealing with the people that you know who live in the city, who can talk to you personally and probably know you personally and handle your account on a daily or weekly or yearly basis.
What if they did a clandestine approach where they just started this process a little bit earlier and just went through it where people are getting contacted and they start talking amongst themselves, but like, hey, I got an email from a ticket rep. Did you get an email? Did you get a call? And they just go through it. However they prioritize it one by one until they fill the seats.
Yeah, but then if the Pittsburgh game doesn't happen, then you have to undo the whole thing. It would have been awful.
Yeah, they couldn't sell them earlier than what they're doing right now based on the availability of the stadium. Yeah,
the key thing about what David's saying is you would have needed clearance a lot earlier.
Yes.
Then you could have done it, but it would have been very slow. But it would have cut out all of this Ticketmaster nonsense. Then I think you still probably use Ticketmaster, right? You negotiate the whole thing and then you say, all right, here's your link, go to Ticketmaster and buy them or something akin to that, right?
Man, I can't imagine having the phone ringing off the hook right now, the way it would be within that office. But I mean, this is their big day, right? The big week when tickets go on sale. And on one hand, you're happy to see it. You know, they're coming off of a year where they went to the AFC Championship game. You have some fans who are diehards who want in no matter the circumstance and are willing to move around. So on the other hand, you want to make sure they're a priority. And when Ticketmaster, your NFL partner, screws up, and you're left cleaning up the mess, that's a massive headache. and you end up
postponing. It's a big problem. And I want to point out Jim Rice and others with the Titans ticket office that are going out of their way to help individually season ticket holders to make sure that they get the most satisfying experience they possibly can with those that want to attend the game.
Coming up, go ahead, Chad. Sorry.
Oh, so I was going to say we've got Friday. We've got the our show at Edley's in Sylvan Park, SEC tailgate party. We're going to be talking about a lot of SEC games this weekend. I'm starting to become concerned that Vanderbilt's going to field a football team this season. After the news yesterday, this from Adam Sparks of the Tennessean. One opt-out, one transfer, three injuries, and one quarantine were added to Vanderbilt's roster yesterday. Guys, they've had four offensive linemen either opt out or just stop playing football with eligibility left. They got a guy who started 40 straight games on the defensive line slated to be the starting right guard on offense for their game against Texas A&M. And they had one of their best linebackers opt out yesterday of the season. Yesterday, getting set for their first game. And Derek Mason was asked about it, and he said, I don't really know the number. I haven't looked at it. I'm too focused on getting my team ready. I don't know the overall number of players who have opted out. This is pure misery for Vanderbilt football. Vandy football fans are probably the one group in the SEC that wish they would have gone the original route of the Big Ten in the SEC and just canceled football this fall. And had a do-over for next year. This is not good.
Coming up, we will be qualifying a lucky listener for a Volunteers tailgate set that includes a Tennessee 10x10 tent, two chairs, table, a cooler, and more. The grand prize winner will be selected with 3HL on Friday at 5:30. We'll have a qualifier coming up a bit later in today's show. 615-737-1045, our number. Josh is next up on the show. Hey, Josh.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Never seen in the past where I thought one wide receiver made much of a difference on a team, like as big of a difference as I see. You look at the Texans and how inept their offense is looking, and the same with the Vikings. And then you look at Buffalo and Arizona, who got those receivers, Diggs and Hopkins, and they're making, it seems to me, they're making all the difference in the world. Is that what you guys hear? Is there something else in there that I'm not seeing that's helping or hurting those teams?
It's a really good point. Now, I think you could look at Buffalo and say, you know, what's the one ingredient they needed? Well, it was a big-time wide receiver. And Kyler Murray had a lot of young guys who maybe kind of knew that system of offense, but they didn't have an ace, so to speak. And so I think you're dead on, but it's also about, you know, kind of a final piece to the offense in many ways. I'm not totally sold on Arizona. I know they're off to a nice start, but I don't think they're as good as they've looked so far. Plus, that division is going to be very challenging, though San Francisco maybe coming back to the pack with the injuries that they've faced. I'm very high on Buffalo, and that move looks phenomenal right now. Diggs had more receiving yardage last weekend than the Vikings had collectively, and it just looks like a foolish move by the Vikings, who are desperate for plays right now. And Hutton said, you watched it, he's looking at Thielen all the time, and I'm sure Thielen's getting different coverage than he was getting when he was.
Oh, he's throwing. They're just throwing it up into double coverage. So they had a pick called back for a defensive penalty in the second quarter against Indy, Minnesota, I'm talking about, Cousins. We just threw up a terrible pass into double coverage. Two plays later, double coverage, threw it up, pick again. I mean, it's bad.
Who was their high draft pick?
Justin Jefferson.
Justin Jefferson. Did he do anything
receiver
in
from
game?
LSU?
They
not
He's
that
on
I
my
noticed.
Fantasy team's bench. He had like four catches.
Van Jefferson, I believe.
No, Justin Jefferson.
Justin Jefferson.
Sorry.
With the Rams.
Is their first round pick.
No, that's right, yeah.
I mean, you need him to be a player right out of the gate if you're dealing Stephon Diggs. You got to have an impactful rookie receiver, and not yet for Justin Jefferson.
Coming up, Greg Cosell will join us. Time to get his thoughts on the Vikings. Clowney's impact on the front for the Titans. We'll get into Tannehill's decision-making, Derrick Henry, Corey Davis, and his play through 2 weeks, Jonnu Smith, much more.
Vinny Vaccaro.
A lot of details coming up from Greg Cosell as we go inside the film with one of the NFL film's best, the best, when it comes to analyzing the tape. Greg Cosell next. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, alongside Chad Withrow and Paul Kuharski. I'm Jonathan Hutton. Glad you're with us, and always glad to be joined each Wednesday by Greg Cosell, who joins us on 104.5 The Zone, presented by Turner Security. When you turn to Turner Security, you can leave your security issues at the door. TurnerSecurity.us for more info. Greg, hope you're doing well.
Well, I'm doing as well as the Titans, I guess, Jonathan, so things are good.
So far, so good with the 2-0 start, and we'll begin with the start to the game for the Titans on that opening play, the boot throwback to Jonnu Smith. Explain why it was a great play for the Titans to run on first down early in the game against Andrew Wingard, who's a backup safety for Jacksonville, and how the Jags just seemingly lost Jonnu Smith through all of that traffic.
Yeah, well, what was interesting about the play is actually Smith did not come from across the formation. He was actually on the side in which he caught the ball. But still, because of the boot action, see, with the boot action, and Coach Mack would speak to this really well, as well as I could, is when there's boot action underneath defenders, linebackers, they have rules. And what happens is there's almost always, as there was on this play, a backside crosser. So when Tannehill boots to the right, there's always a crosser coming from the left to the right, and linebackers are taught to hunt up the crosser. And then when the play goes back, the throwback element, there's no one there. Now, you know, if it's pure man coverage, obviously the player needs to be defended. But even then, eyes tend to look into the backfield and at the boot action, and you grab the eyes of defenders. But that was a great way to start the game.
Titans were 4-for-4 in the red zone in this game, 6-of-7 in the red zone possessions, ending in touchdowns so far this season. What are just overall aspects of Arthur Smith's play calling that works so well in confined spacing inside the 20?
Well, I think there's a combination of things here, because sometimes it's not just the pure play call, like the Smith 9-yard touchdown that ended the first drive. Now, to me, and again, I'd have to hear Arthur Smith explain this, but I thought that there was a built-in route adjustment by Smith, because if you watch that play carefully, that throw was a late-in-the-down throw by Tannehill that was not part of the progression. He kind of waited, and then he came back to Smith, who I thought turned his route back to the outside as a built-in adjustment late in the down. And so there's an example where I think that was prevalent there. If you look at, let's say, Davis's 9-yard touchdown, I thought that was just a great, great route by Davis versus Henderson. I thought Davis did an outstanding job at the top of his route stem to sell the out move before breaking back inside to beat Henderson. And I love the way Davis attacked the ball. So there's many reasons why plays work in the red zone. Sometimes it is design. Sometimes you make an adjustment, and sometimes players win. So teams that do well in the red zone, there's many, many factors. And then the quarterback has to make really accurate throws, because obviously the windows are just tighter.
Talking about that adjustment on that first touchdown for the Titans to Jonnu Smith, I thought it was great awareness by Tannehill, and to see the defender with his back turned, and then a great play by Jonnu Smith. And I started thinking, this shows Jonnu Smith is a good red zone target. When I just throw those three words at you, Greg, red zone target, do you see Jonnu Smith and his skill set as a guy who is a good red zone target for this Titans team?
I do. I mean, I think he's a big guy. He's very athletic. He can go up and get the football. You know, that particular play, like I said, because I've talked to coaches, not about that particular play, but very often there's sort of built-in route adjustments that occur when the true design of the play gets beyond the design of the play. Because I'm not sitting here with a clock, but my guess is Tannehill had the ball in the pocket for 3.5, 3.8 seconds on that, maybe even 4 before he let turn that one loose. So every team has sort of built in adjustments in the red zone in those circumstances. But Smith has the ability to be a really good red zone receiver. I think that didn't he make, I don't know, this just popped into my head. Didn't he have a really nice red zone touchdown against the Patriots last year in the playoffs? I believe he did, where he went up and got the ball. But anyway, that just popped into my head. Maybe I'm wrong.
He had a great one against the Ravens, I know, where he went up and made a spectacular catch in the corner of the end zone at one point. So he was big in the playoffs.
What talk us through the Tannehill to Humphreys touchdown. What happened in protection there, and how good an anticipatory throw is that to throw a wobbly ball that out of the hand, you're thinking, uh-oh. But actually he knew exactly where Humphreys was going to be and what the coverage was going to be.
Josh Allen. Josh Allen was bearing down on him.
Yeah, well, that was a play that it was not a difficult coverage to decipher. It was what we call one robber. It was clear from the beginning of the play, so it was man coverage. So Humphreys just had to run away from Hayden, and he did. He actually ran a great route to create separation at the top of his route stem to run away from Hayden. And then Tannehill knew he could make that throw. So it was a case where he knew where the ball could go. He knew the throw was there, but Allen beat Kelly, the right tackle Kelly, to the inside quickly and was just bearing down on him. But like I said, he knew where the ball could go. That wasn't a case, it might have looked like it watching it live to a lot of people that, oh, he just threw it up. He didn't just throw that up. He knew where the ball was going, and he just made a great, great throw under duress because he took a shot.
Greg, I'm curious, as you watch this film, if you didn't know A.J. Brown was out, would it be noticeable? Like, could you tell based on what they were doing, they were running certain things because A.J. Brown wasn't available?
No, I still think they tried to do that quick bang play action pass game. They called it a couple of times. It didn't work because Jacksonville took away the throw. Maybe they would have called it one or two more times with A.J. Brown because he's really good on those slants and deeper slants off that quick bang play action pass game. And we'll get to that because I think there's a really interesting matchup with Minnesota for this week in that regard and how Minnesota will play it. So we'll get to that. But no, I don't think that it was dramatically different. I think they're a team that, you know, kind of does what they do, and they keep doing it, and they do it well. And I think, they're going to have to get that run game going better. They still struggle to run the football.
Greg Cosell with us, presented by Turner Security. Are you noticing anything different in how Corey Davis is attacking the football or how he's being used in this offense? He scored his first touchdown since October of last year. We have talked about him becoming more of a presence in the red zone whenever you've joined us over the offseason.
Yeah. And I mentioned that he ran a great, great route to beat Henderson, the rookie, and that was a great route. The week before, he ran a ton of crossers, and I talked about how I think he's really good running those routes because he's tall and he's a strider, and you want him to get off the ball clean, which is why he's the Z, who's the off-the-ball receiver and not the X. So, you know, in an ideal world, I think that his skill set fits the Z, and whether he can continue with volume, obviously, is Brown due to be back this week?
Do not know.
Okay. Even with Brown back, I saw numerous plays last year, and we talked about this, where Davis was open, and Tannehill, who I think developed a pretty good chemistry with Brown, would throw it to Brown. And there's no question Brown's a very good receiver as well. But I think Corey Davis has a really good skill set, and maybe this is the year it all gets put together. But he does certain things really, really well, and you want to play to his strengths.
Titans always were big with Dean Pease in the mix about scheming things up to find some pressure. Doesn't seem like they've done a lot of that. The blitz numbers are not high. The front four not generating much on their own yet. Do you not blitz here because the secondary's been so shaky? What have you seen in regard to that?
Yeah, and that could be a philosophy thing. I mean, obviously Dean Pease is not there. Sometimes coaches, PK, just don't believe as much in pressure as other coaches. You know, it's hard to get a feel for what Mike Vrabel ultimately wants to do, but you're right, they're not getting a lot of pressure with their down four. They're not blitzing quite as much. They're still trying to be very multiple with their coverage of looks. There's a lot of disguise and late movement. So that part of the Dean Pease profile still exists, but there's been less, I think, just noticing the tape, and you probably have the numbers, but there's been less pressure to me. And they might need to do that because they certainly are struggling to rush the quarterback with four. And it gets back to what we said. You know, Jadeveon Clowney will not be that guy. So, you know, when they signed him and people probably thought, oh, now they have a pass rush, he's not that guy.
What have been your observations of Clowney through 2 weeks?
I think he's been up and down. I think he, for the most part, to me, he plays kind of like Clowney. He tends to be a little upright. Every once in a while, he'll show tremendous quickness off the ball and beat a guy, and can be disruptive in that regard. They move him around a bit, which they do both in their base defense, where they'll sort of stand him up, not quite as a stacked linebacker, but almost like a joker where he moves around. They'll do the same thing in their sub-defenses to try to get him as a pass rusher against guards and centers. But I think he's been, to me, what he's kind of always been. He'll make some plays, but he's not a dominant snap-after-snap player.
Let's give credit where credit's due here in a play that included Jadeveon Clowney free off the edge. Minshew's touchdown pass to Robinson, I believe it was. Clowney comes off that left edge, and Minshew threw that perfect pass to his back, even with Jayon Brown in seemingly perfect coverage.
Yeah, and I think it was to Thompson. It was the touchdown that tied it up, I believe, at 30-30 in the fourth quarter. And it was the right tackle who blew it, Taylor, because that shouldn't have happened. They blitzed, actually. Vaccaro blitzed on that particular play, and they went, they played man, obviously. It was cover one blitz. And Vaccaro came from the same side as Clowney, and he came as almost a second/third level rusher, and the right tackle, Taylor, should never have left Clowney, who was a first level on the line of scrimmage rusher. So therefore, Clowney got in clean, but Minshew just made he read it immediately and made a great throw because it was man coverage. So it wasn't a difficult read, but he made a great throw on the wheel to Thompson, and Brown was matched on him.
Well, you mentioned Vaccaro, a lot of things to cover for in the secondary, minus Adoree Jackson. He was all over the place, had a big stat line in the game. Did he play as well as it appeared?
Yeah, I mean, he's a very, I would say he's a very active player, Vaccaro. They ask him to do a lot because he plays man at times on the tight end. He'll play somewhat on the back end, not a ton, but he'll play on the back end. They'll use him as a blitzer. Yeah, you know, he's a very active player in what he does and what they ask him to do. So they've got two good safeties, although I can tell you, I know that Byard would want a few plays back. I think on that long run by the back Robinson, I think it was about a 40-yard run. I know Byard missed a tackle that was his to make, and I'm sure that he's probably not happy with himself on that. He'd like to have that play back.
Greg Cosell with us, presented by Turner Security. They're online at turnersecurity.us. Greg, can Jacksonville use Shenault even more in different ways than the ways Jay Gruden used him in this past week?
Yeah, I thought they did so week one. So, again, he's still a rookie, so maybe it just depends on the week and it depends on his growth as a player. But I think that there's more they can do with him, and I think they'll get to that. You know, it was a pandemic offseason. You know, young players, they have a good game week one, and I think people just assume, man, that's going to happen every week. But they're still rookies kind of figuring it out.
Went and watched the Minnesota Indy game, but I didn't dive into it the way you certainly have. Kirk Cousins, though, looks Thielen's way a lot. Thielen is a strong player, but he'll even bypass some small gains to go for the bundle and throw into double coverage like he did last week against Indy. Are you noticing that trend, or has he always done that?
You know, I think that he's clearly the number one receiver here because they're playing with Johnson. I mean, they're a team that likes to play out of base, first of all. So they'll play out of base more than most. The percentage of snaps they play with three wide is still over 50, but it's among the lowest in the NFL relative to the rest of the league. So they like to play with two tight ends. They like to play with the fullback, C.J. Ham. although through 2 weeks, and I think it's a function of being behind in games, they've not played with the fullback as much as they did a year ago. Now, granted, they have a different coordinator in Kubiak. He's there now, but he was there last year as well. So I think in an ideal world, if the games play out the way they want it to play out, Jonathan, you're going to see base personnel. You're going to see 21 personnel with two backs. You're going to see 12 personnel with two tight ends. You'll even see 13 personnel with three tight ends, and you'll see the run game be the foundation. And then when they do go to three wide, based on the first two games, the rookie Justin Jefferson from LSU is their slot receiver. So they play with Thielen predominantly on the outside with Johnson on the outside as well, and Jefferson, who looks good. I mean, he just hasn't had a ton of targets, but he's looked good in his movement through two games.
It does not seem like they've been very Kubiak-ish so far. And we talked to John McClain a little bit about this, who knows Kubiak well, who saw some Minnesota and said they're not booting Cousins the way that Kubiak style offense does. Do you feel like they've gotten away from what Kubiak does, and do you expect them to do more of the Shanahan type stuff?
Well, I think their first two games got away from them a little early, PK, and therefore they could not really play the way they'd ideally like to. This is a run first offense in which the pass game works off the run, and then you get the play action game, the play action boot game. When you get down the way they've gotten down with the first 2 weeks, it's very difficult to play that way. So I think they want to play that way. You know, we'll see how this game works out. Look, this game's in Minnesota. I would be very surprised. I'm not going to sit here and tell you Kirk Cousins is going to go 30 for 40 for 450, but I'd be very surprised if Kirk Cousins has another really, really bad game. He seems to have two of those every year. Rarely are they back-to-back. So I think they're going to go back to basics. Now, whether they can run the ball the way they want to, that remains to be seen against the Titans' defense, but that's the way they want to play.
Is the loss of Diggs really that impactful to this offense? We had a caller who asked the question about DeAndre Hopkins leaving Houston, Diggs leaving Minnesota, and how much worse those offenses look without those guys. Is Diggs really one of those guys in the league that you take him off of a roster and you're going to have this big of a drop-off?
I don't think we know the answer to that yet because of the nature of their first two games. I think we have to wait and see. Ideally, they get back into their rhythm this week from their perspective, and then they play the way they want to play. We don't know the answer to that. There's no question Diggs is a very good player. You know, you take a really good receiver off a team, and obviously the pass game is a little different. Whether it's less productive numbers-wise, that remains to be seen. But we just don't know enough about the Vikings after two games because they got so far behind. Now, we also have to talk about their defense because that to me is a really intriguing matchup in this game.
Well, let's get to the matchup, but first, just the thought that Anthony Barr is not a part of that group. How does that impact their defense knowing he's no longer available and on injured reserve?
Well, that's one point that's big because not only is he a good player, but it really limits what they do in their sub nickel. And they're a 100% nickel defense when they go sub. They do not play dime. What they like to do a lot of is they like to play 3-3-5 sub nickel, meaning 3 D linemen, 3 linebackers, and 5 defensive backs, and use Barr as a pass rusher because that's what he was in college. He's a good pass rusher. Now they don't have that. So that changes their sub nickel defense. Also, they're totally different at corner this year. Now, I don't know if Cameron Dantzler is back this week. He had a rib injury and he missed this game, but he started week one. But they're playing week one. They play Dantzler, the rookie, and Mike Hughes at outside corner in their base. And then in their sub, Hughes plays inside over the slot. This week, because Dantzler was out, Gladney played outside in their sub nickel. So we'll see. But the point is, their corners are totally different from a year ago. It's a totally revamped group.
And the matchup to watch, Greg, that you wanted to set up, the slants with how the Titans run their offense and their passing game.
The reason I mention that is because the Vikings are predominantly under Mike Zimmer a split safety defense. And split safety, meaning each safety has sort of a half of the field, but they predominantly play a defense we call quarters or cover four, not so much cover two. And the reason that's important in this game in particular is cover four safeties have both a run and a pass responsibility. So it's important for them in the run game because you know Derrick Henry's going to get the ball. He's got 56 carries through two games. And number two, that slant game off the bang play action. Quarter safeties are closer to the line of scrimmage than cover two safeties. So now Harris and Harrison Smith can be in excellent position to play that quick bang slant game that the Titans love to run off that bang play action. You know, the three-step drop, the quick five-step drop. You know, that's the A.J. Brown special if he plays, but they still try to do it with Davis as well.
So does this open up stuff behind them? You run a couple of those slants and then you sneak something in behind them?
Well, you'd like to. I mean, yeah, you might try to do that because I think that they're going to be coached this week to be aware of that. It's the staple of the Titans' offense. The other thing that's going to be really interesting, I think, to look for in this game is I think you'll see what we call stemming the tight end, taking the tight end from one side of the formation to the other. Because the Vikings, and Mike Zimmer's been this way for years, he plays what we call over fronts, meaning the defensive front is cheated to the strong side of the offensive formation. Okay, so now if you take the tight end and you then stem him across the formation to the other side, you get the Vikings stuck playing a front that they really don't want to be playing, and it could really set up some excellent blocking angles in your run game. And that's where that'll be on Tannehill.
Greg Cosell, presented by Turner Security. Final thing for you, Greg. Jimmy G, Nick Bosa, Drew Lock, Cortland Sutton, Saquon Barkley to Christian McCaffrey. Rosters were completely reconfigured across the league this past week. We're only in week two, but what stands out to you for adjustments that now have to be made in a scramble mode as we're in September?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know the answer to that. I mean, I think a team like the Niners, Nick Mullins started a good part of the year 2 years ago. Kyle Shanahan is a scheme offensive coach. I don't think his offense will change one bit. I think he'll run his offense. Defensively is where they're going to have a little bit of an issue because Bosa is so good in their front. It's a front four based defense. The Barkley thing is interesting. I guess they just signed Devonta Freeman. Whatever kind of shape he's in, but he's going to end up being their feature back.
Here we go into week three. It's already here. Greg, thank you as always. We'll be watching the matchup show, and we love having you on each week.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks so much.
Greg Cosell, presented by Turner Security. He joins us each Wednesday. When you turn to Turner Security, you can leave your security issues at the door. TurnerSecurity.us for more information. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.
This is your home for Titans football.
Ryan Tannehill!
104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Crew is all here today. Coming up at 11 o'clock, we will hear from Doug Matthews. I take that back. That'll be at 11:15. Mike Vrabel at 11 o'clock. We'll speak to the media. They have moved their practice indoors, Paul, so we won't have the normal reporters out there for that practice. It'll be stretch period only, I believe.
No, it'll be nothing. So we'll find out who did what based on strictly the injury report. No report at two-ish about who was out there and who wasn't.
So we'll hear from Vrabel at 11 as they prepare for Minnesota. Very good visit there from Greg Cosell.
Yeah,
with a look at what to expect from Minnesota, who will be emptying the chamber on Sunday at 0-2. Defensively, they have been really bad. And with the defensive-minded head coach in Zimmer, you can bet they are going to go all out. Offensively, same thing with Kubiak calling the plays. And the rookie corners, can the Titans take advantage of those matchups? Same goes for the Vikings. They're going to take the same thing.
Two-way street, really. But it could be a game about whose corners hold up better. And, you know, young talent on both sides, but young untested talent on both sides. And Titans, you know, popular guy on the Vikings that a lot of people wanted the Titans to take. So we'll have a firsthand accounting there. I want more from Christian Fulton, right? Want to see more of Christian Fulton. And obviously made a nice play on the pick, a ball that came right to him, got a good return out of it. But was still behind Chris Jackson. I'd like to see him get ahead of Chris Jackson. I'd like to see more of him. So we'll see what kind of practice week. I think now that's more and more about what you've done this week and less about what you did during camp, right? He's got a chance to catch and pass him, I would expect.
We find out on Sunday if the Vikings are really this bad. I mean, yeah. I think this is the last stand for them. They are going to give everything they have from a schematic standpoint, from a play standpoint on Sunday. The Titans better be ready for that. Because if they lose, especially if they lose and look bad the way they have the last 2 weeks in this game, they just really are that bad.
I think.
And now no Anthony Barr defensively, who's out for the year.
That's a bad loss. A bad loss for them. They're not as good as we thought, even if they rebound. You know, they're contending more for a wild card spot, and they're going to be beneficiaries of the 7 playoff field. I don't see them contending for the division, you know, and that's a big declaration 2 games in. But you look at the gap between them and the Packers right now, barring injuries for Green Bay, I don't see them being in the same league in that division.
And then Chicago's 2-0, you know? Yep. That's the other thing. That's the other surprise there. They've got so at linebacker, they were playing. They've got their rookie, Troy Dye. And then they also have Hardy Nickerson Jr., who was inactive this past week but will likely be active on the roster this week. So that's who they'll call up. But, again, Anthony Barr is a huge part of what they try to do defensively. Chad, congrats to your Braves, punching their ticket to the postseason, winning their division last night.
And I'm not happy to see that as of right now they'd be playing the St. Louis Cardinals in the first round of the playoffs. Let's see how many times the Braves can lose to the Cardinals to open a playoff series. They lost in the play-in game with the controversial infield fly rule. They lose giving up 10 runs in inning 1 last year in game number 5 against the Cardinals. So I'd love for them to avoid playing the Cardinals in the first round. I don't care about the matchup. I don't want the Braves to lose to the Cardinals in round 1 of the playoffs again. But yeah, no, it's been a good season for the Braves.
You're not going to be happy with any matchup. If you're going to be honest, they lose in the first round of the playoffs, if not the first, the second, that's what they do. Have your fun right now, celebrating this moment. When you win the division, that's what you do. This is when you throw your party, and then it's all over.
I like your response to Will Bowling, Paul. About the this has become commonplace. And then you said that's good that you know now what to expect after this about what's commonplace for the Braves. I did laugh at that.
The Braves don't have any. They're also in. And congrats to Reed. They're flying the W in Chicago as well for the Cubs.
Reed doesn't care.
Reed's out on the 60 game baseball season.
Yeah,
I'm in on some playoff action once we get to next week. Then can watch some playoff games. I'm ready for that. I've actually enjoyed this season a lot, too. I don't enjoy the fact the Braves don't really have any starting pitching outside of Max Fried, and they're probably going to have a bullpen game at some point where they start with the middle relievers because their bullpen
teams
strength in pitching. It's going to be a weird pitching staff manipulation by Brian Snitker in their playoff series with whatever they decide to do. Cole Hamels, by the way, got paid $18 million to pitch 3 1/3 innings in Baltimore for the Braves. He is now officially out for the season after coming back and pitching 3 1/3 against Baltimore for the Braves.
Terrific deal. Terrific.
Worked out real well for the Braves.
I think the playoffs are going to be really exciting. I had a conversation in my house yesterday about Stanley Cup finals going on, and like nobody knew. I'm going to be really interested to see Stanley Cup finals ratings and to hear from hockey people, because you put hockey on against baseball, football, basketball, a golf major. I mean, you want to talk about how far down the pecking order you are when your local team's not in it. This thing's a blip.
We say it every year, but aren't they on NBC Sports Network?
I think so.
I mean, I'm flipping through, that's where I see them.
Yeah. That combined with the competition is killer. You
can't win doing that.
Killer. How are they selling themselves to a broader audience? They're not.
Well, also, Dallas and Tampa being the two teams is a killer.
Dallas, yeah. By the way, what was it, 2 years ago? They were, but when they beat the Preds, and there's a team that was on the upswing. Look what they went and did.
Yep.
Yep. That series is tied 1-1, by the way. Game 3 tonight, 7 o'clock.
Preds getting talk about Yosi, you know, winning a big trophy, which, you know, to me is, you know, hey, congratulations to him, but let's not let them off the hook for their lack of presence for weeks and weeks and weeks as this tournament went on.
No, to me, it emphasizes the disappointment even more. You know, I'm disappointed for Yosi because with a full season, he's not just breaking personal records, and he set some franchise records, but he's setting all the franchise records if he continues to play through the rest of the season and it's not suspended. He was playing that well. A phenomenal year for Roman Yosi. But it also it emphasizes the point of the opportunity that they had with the best defensive season we've seen from a player all around from Roman Yosi, and they didn't get anything out of it. They went back home quickly.
I think anytime you start to rack up individual awards in a season that was so disappointing, I'm with you, Hutton, in that it just shines a light on that disappointment in the season. And when I see the Norris Trophy going to Roman Yosi, it makes me even more disappointed in that performance against Arizona, where Kyle Turris would have you believe that they dominated that series in losing in four games. They did not. They did not dominate that series. And they need to change the mindset. And when you've got guys winning individual awards and you're doing nothing as a team, that's not a good thing. And to me, it's not something that should be celebrated. Roman Yosi should be celebrated for his performance. That team should not be celebrated.
It's just interesting to look back. You know, we've moved so far on and there's been so much going on that I think that Yosi's individual success being celebrated right now offers a reminder of just how badly the Preds and Nashville SC with their COVID disaster, not being in that tournament, sacrificed the window that this town, they would have captured this town. And now we've moved so far past that. And it's such a Titans deal at 2-0, and it's about to become a Vols deal, and football's king here. And soccer and hockey had a chance to snatch their windows and completely handed them away.
Yeah, missed out on a massive opportunity. And just real quick on Yosi, that stretch from the middle of December, I don't have the exact dates. There was a middle of December stretch where he went through the new year where he was on fire. And we were asking David Poyle about him during that part. And that's where the steam picked up for this guy's not just having a career year. He's having a franchise best type season. And then we see the season on pause. I would have loved to have seen the numbers he could have established. Because there was no stopping him this year. He was great all around. Also great, Doug Matthews. He'll join us today at 11:15. But when we come back, we will hear from head coach of the Tennessee Titans, Mike Vrabel. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone.
Week 3, and the Titans find themselves in the Twin Cities for a showdown against Kirk Cousins and the Minnesota Vikings. Mike Keith and Coach Dave McGinnis have the call. Kickoff is Sunday at noon on your home for Titans football, 104.5 The Zone.